Chapter 3 They raced again above the mountains, and Dirk did better this time, losing by less than he had before, but the improvement did not lighten his mood. For most of the weary trip they flew in silence, apart, Gwen meters ahead of him. Their backs were to the broken, muted wheel of fire as they went, and Gwen was a witch figure vague against the sky and always out of reach. The melancholy of Warlorn's dying forests had seeped into his flesh, and he saw Gwen through tainted eyes, a doll figure in a suit as faded as despair, her black hair oily with red light. Thoughts came in a colored chaos as the wind swept past him, and one, more often than the others, she was not his Jenny, was not and never had been. Twice during their flight Dirk saw, or thought he saw, the jade and silver flashing, tormenting, as it had tormented him in the wood. He forced his eyes away each time and watched black clouds, long and thin, skitter across the barren, empty sky. The grey Manta air car and the olive-green war machine were both gone from the rooftop lot when they reached Lartain. Only Ruach's yellow teardrop was unmoved. They landed nearby. Dirk's landing yet another clumsy stumble, now oddly humorless, only stupid, and left the sky scoots and flight boots out on the roof where they removed them. Near the tubes they spoke briefly, but Dirk forgot the words even as he said them. Then Gwen left him. In his rooms at the base of the tower, Arkin Ruach was waiting patiently. Dirk found a recliner amid the pastel walls and sculpture and the potted Kimdisi plants. He reclined, wanting only to rest and not to think. But Ruach was there, chuckling and shaking his head so the white blonde hair danced, thrusting a tall green glass into his hand. Dirk took it and sat up again. The glass was a fine thin crystal, plain and unadorned except for a fast-melting coat of frost. He drank, and the wine was very green and cold, incense and cinnamon down his throat.
"Utter tired you look, Dirk," the Kimdisi said after he'd found a drink of his own and seated himself with a plop in a slung-web chair beneath the shadow of a drooping black plant. The spear-shaped leaves cast striped darkness on his plump, smiling face. He sipped, sucking the drink noisily, and very briefly Dirk despised him.
"A long day," he said noncommittally.
"Truth," Ruach agreed. "A day of cavalars, eh? Always long. Sweet Gwen and Gentany and Lars Garcy, enough to make any day last forever. What do you say?"
Dirk said nothing.
"But now," Ruach said, smiling, "you have seen. Me, I wanted that for you to see. Before I told you, before I was sworn to tell you, yes, a swearing to myself. Gwen, she has told me. We talk, you know, as friends, and I have known her and Jan too since Avalon. But here we've grown closer. She cannot talk of it easily ever, but she talks to me, or has, and I can tell you, not violating trust. You were the one to know, I think."
The drink sent icy fingers down into his chest, and Dirk felt his weariness lifting. It seemed as if he had been half asleep, as if Ruach had been talking for a long time and he had missed it all.
"What are you talking about?" he said. "What should I know? Why Gwen needs you," Ruach said. "Why she sent the thing? The red tear, you know? I know. She's told me."
Suddenly Dirk was quite alert, interested and puzzled. "She told you," he began, then stopped. Gwen had asked him to wait, and long ago the promise he had made, but it fit. Perhaps he should listen. Perhaps it was simply hard for her to tell him. Ruach would know, her friend, she had said, in the forest, the only one she could talk to.
"What? You must help her, Dirk Talarian, somehow, I don't know."
"Help her how?
To be free? To escape?"
Dirk set his drink down and scratched his head.
"From who?" "Them. The Cavalars."
He frowned. "Jan, you mean? I met him this morning, him and Janicek. She loves Jan. I don't understand." Ruach laughed, sucked from his drink, laughed again. He was dressed in a three-piece suit of alternating brown and green squares, like motley, and as he sat spouting nonsense, Dirk wondered if the short ecologist was indeed a fool.
"Loves him, yes, she said that," Ruach said. "You sure of it, are you? Well..."
Dirk hesitated, trying to remember her words when they had talked by the still green lake. "I'm not sure," he said, "but something to that effect. She is... what was it?"
"Bethane?"
Ruach suggested. Dirk nodded. "Yes, Bethane, wife." Ruach chuckled.
"No, utter wrong. In the car I listened, Gwen said it wrong. Well, not really, but you took the wrong impression. Bethane is not wife. Part truth, the biggest lie of all, remember? What do you think Tane is?"
The word stopped him. Tane. He had heard the word 100 times on Warlorn. Friend? He guessed, not knowing what he meant.
"Bethane is more of wife than Tane is friend," Ruach said. "Learn the outworlds better, Dirk. No, Bethane is woman to man word in old Kavalar, for a held wife bound by jade and silver. Now, there can be much affection in jade and silver, much love, yes, though you know the word used for that, the standard Terran word, there is no like word in old Kavalar. Interesting, eh? Can they love without a word for it, Telerian, friend?"
Dirk did not reply. Ruach shrugged and drank and continued.
"Well, no matter, but think of it. I spoke of jade and silver, and yes, often the Kavalars have love in that bond, love from Bethane to Highborn, from Highborn to Bethane sometimes, or liking, if not love, but not always, not necessarily, you see?"
Dirk shook his head.
"Kavalar bonds are custom, an obligation," Ruach said, leaning forward very intently. "With love, late-coming accident. Violent folk, I told you. Read history, read legends. Gwen met Jan on Avalon, you know, and she did not read, not enough. He was Jan Vickery of High Cavalan. And what was that? Some planet she never knew? Truth. So their liking grew. Call it love, perhaps, and sex happens, and he offers her jade and silver wrought in his pattern, and suddenly she is Bethane to him, still not quite knowing. Trapped."
"Trapped? How trapped?"
"Read history. The violence of High Cavalan is long past. The culture is unchanged. Gwen is Bethane to Jan Vickery, Bethane Heldwife, his wife, yes, his lover, and more. Property and slave, she is that too, and gift. She is his gift to Iron Jay Gathering. With her he bought his high names, yes. She must have children if he orders, whether she wishes or no. She must take Garza's lover also, whether she wishes or no. If Jan dies in duel with a man of a holdfast other than Iron Jade, a Braith or a Redsteel, Gwen passes to that man like baggage, property, to become his Bethane, or a mere Iron Kethi if the victor already wears jade and silver. If Jan dies of natural causes or in duel with another Iron Jade, Gwen goes to Garce. Her will in the matter is no concern. Who cares that she hates him, not the Kavalars? And when Garce dies, eh? Well, when that comes, she is Iron Kethi, hold fast breeder, degraded forever, free to use for any of the Kethi. Kethi meaning hold fast brothers, more or less, the men of the family. Iron Jade Gathering's old, huge family, thousands and thousands of family, and any can have her. What did she call Jan? Husband? No. Jailer. That is what he is, he and Garce. Loving jailers maybe if he think that such can love truly, as you or I would. Jantany honours our Gwen, and should, for he is high Iron Jade now. She is his Bethane gift, and if she dies or leaves him, he is Frey Iron Jade, an old man, mocked, empty-armed, without voice in council. But he slaves her, does not love her, and she is years after Avalon now, older and wiser, and now she knows.
Ruach had delivered the last in a breathless fury, his lips drawn tight. Dirk hesitated.
He doesn't love her, then? As you love your property, so a high bond and is Bethane. It is a tight bond, jade and silver, never to be broken, but it is a bond of obligation and possession. Oh, love, that is elsewhere, if the Kavalars have it at all. To be found in chosen brother, in the shield and soulmate and lover and warrior twin, the ever-loyal bringer of pleasure and taker of blows and lifter of pain, the lifetime strong bond.
Tane, Dirk said, a little numbly, his mind racing ahead.
Tane, Ruach nodded. The Kavalars, all violent as they are, have great poetry. Much celebrates the Tane, the bond of iron and glowstone, none the jade and silver.
Things fell smoothly into place. You were saying, Dirk began, that she and Jan don't love each other, that Gwen is all but a slave, yet she doesn't leave. Ruark's chubby face was flushed.
Leave? Utter nonsense. They would only force her back. A Highborn must keep and protect his Bethane, and kill the one who tries to steal her.
And she sent the jewel to me?
Gwen talks to me, I know. What other hope has she? The Cavalars? Jantany has twice killed in duels. No Cavalar would touch her. And what good if they did, me? Am I a hope?
His soft hands swept down his body, and he dismissed himself in contempt.
You, Telerion, you are Gwen's hope. You who owe her, you who loved her once.
Dirk heard his own voice as if from far away. I still love her, he said.
Good. I think you know that Gwen, though she would never say it, yet I think she too still feels as she did, and she never has for Jantany, Riv, Wolf, High, Arn, Jade, Vickery.
The drink, the odd green wine, had touched him more than he would have imagined. Only one glass, a single tall glass, and strange the room ran around him. And Dirk Telerion held himself upright with an effort and heard impossible things and began to wonder. Ruark made no sense, he thought, but then he made too much sense. He explained everything, really, and it was all so shining clear and clear, too, what Dirk must do. Or was it? The room wavered, grew dark and then light again, dark and then light, and Dirk was 1 second very sure and the next not sure at all. What must he do? Something. Something for Gwen. He must find out the truth of things, and then... He raised a hand to his forehead. Beneath the dangling locks of grey-brown hair, his brow was beaded with sweat. Ruark stood suddenly, alarm across his face.
Oh, the Kimdisi said, the wine has made you sick. Utter fool I am. My fault. Outworld wine and Avalon stomachs, yes. Food will help, you know. Food.
He scurried off, brushing the potted plant as he went so the black spears bobbed and danced behind him. Dirk sat very still. Far off in the distance he heard a clatter of plates and pots, but paid it no mind. Still sweating, his forehead was furrowed in thought, thought that was strangely difficult. Logic seemed to elude him, and the clearest things faded even as he grabbed hold of them. He trembled while dead dreams woke to new life, while the choker woods withered in his mind and the wheel burned hot and fiery above the new flowering noonday woods of Warlorn. He could make it happen, force it, wake it, put an end to the long sunset and have Jenny, his Guinevere, forever by his side. Yes, yes. When Ruark came back with forks and bowls of soft cheese and red tubers and hot meat, Dirk was calmer, cool again. He took the bowls and ate in a half-trance while his host prattled on. Tomorrow, he promised himself. He would see them at breakfast, talk to them, learn what truth he could. Then he could act. Tomorrow.
No insult is intended, Vickery was saying. You were not a fool, Lorimar, but in this I think you act foolishly. Dirk froze in the doorway, the heavy wooden door that he had opened without thinking swinging away before him. All of them turned to regard him, four pairs of eyes, Vickery's last, and not until he had finished what he was saying. Gwen had told him to come up to breakfast when they had parted the night before, him only, since Ruark and the Cavalars preferred to avoid each other whenever possible. And this was the correct time, just shortly after dawn. But the scene was not one he had expected to enter. There were four of them in the cavernous living room. Gwen, hair unbrushed and eyes full of sleep, was seated on the edge of the low wooden leather couch that stretched in front of the fireplace and its gargoyle guards. Garce Janicek stood just behind her with his arms crossed and a frown on his face, while Vickery and a stranger confronted each other by the mantel. All three of the men were dressed formally and armed. Janicek wore leggings and shirt of soft charcoal grey, with a high collar and a double row of black iron buttons down his chest. The right sleeve of his shirt had been cut away to display the heavy bracelet of iron and dimly blazing glowstones. Vickery was also all in grey, but without the row of buttons. The front of his shirt was a V that swooped almost to his belt, and against the dark chest hair a jade medallion hung on an iron chain. The newcomer,
The stranger was the first to address Dirk. His back was to the door, but he turned when the others looked up and he frowned. Taller by a head than either Vickery or Janicek, he towered over Dirk, even at a distance of several meters. His skin was a hard brown, very dark against the milk-white suit he wore beneath the pleated folds of a violet half-cape. Grey hair, shot through with white, fell to his broad shoulders, and his eyes, flints of obsidian set in a brown face with 100 lines and wrinkles, were not friendly. Neither was his voice. He looked Dirk over quickly, then said very simply, "Get out." "What?" No reply could be as stupid as his was, Dirk thought even as he said it, but nothing else came to mind. "I said, get out," the giant in white repeated. Like Vickery, both of his forearms were bare to display the bracelets, the almost twins of jade and silver on his left arm and iron and fire on his right. But the patterns and settings of the stranger's armlets were very different. The only thing that was the same exactly was the gun on his hip. Vickery folded his arms just as Janicek had already folded his. "This is my place, Lorimar Highbraith. You have no right to be rude to those who come at my invitation." "An invitation you yourself lack, Braith," Janicek added with a tiny venomous smile. Vickery looked over at his tane, shook his head sharply and vigorously, "No." "But to what?" Dirk wondered.
"I come to you in high grievance, Jantony High Ironjade, with serious talking to do," the white-suited Cavalar rumbled. "Must we treat before an off-worlder?"
He glanced at Dirk again, still frowning.
"A mockman, for all I know."
Vickery's voice was quiet but stern when he replied. "We are done dealing, friend. I told you my answer. My Bethane has my protection, and the Kimdisi, and this man too." He indicated Dirk with a wave of his hand and folded his arms again. "And if you take any among these, then prepare to take me." Janicek smiled. "He is no mockman either," the gaunt, red-bearded Cavalar said.
"This is Dirk Telerion, Carariel of Ironjade, whether you like it or no."
Janicek turned very slightly in Dirk's direction and indicated the stranger in white.
"Telerion, this is Lorimar Reln Winterfox Highbraith Arkellor."
"A neighbor of ours," Gwen said from the couch, speaking for the first time. "He lives in Lartain too."
"Far from you, Iron Jades," the other Cavalar said.
He was not happy. The frown was deep graven in his face, and his black eyes moved from one of them to the next, full of cold anger, before coming to rest on Vickery.
"You are younger than me, Jantony High Ironjade, and your tane younger still. I would not willingly go to face you and yours in duel. Yet code has its demands, as you know, and neither of us should venture too far. You young highbonds oft press that line closely, I feel, and the highbonds of Ironjade most of all, and—"
"And I most of all the highbonds of Ironjade," Vickery said, finishing for the other. Arkellor shook his head.
"Once, when I was but an unweaned child in the holdfasts of Braith, it was duel to so much as interrupt another, as you have done now to me. Truly, the old ways have gone. The men of High Cavalan turn soft before my eyes."
"You think me soft?" Vickery asked quietly.
"Yes and no, High Ironjade. You are a strange one. You have a hardness none can deny, and that is good, but Avalon has put the stench of mockman on you, touched you with a weak and foolish. I do not like your Bethane, bitch, and I do not like your friends. Would that I were younger. I would come at you in fury and teach you again the old wisdoms of the holdfast, the things that you forget so easy."
"Do you call us to duel?"
Janicek asked. "You speak strongly."
Vickery unfolded his arms and waved casually with his hand.
"No, Gas. Lorimar Highbraith does not call us to duel. Do you, friend, Highbond?"
Arkella waited several heartbeats too long before his answer came.
"No," he said. "No, Jantony High Ironjade, no insult is intended."
"And none is taken," Vickery said, smiling. The Braith Highborn did not smile.
Good fortunes, he said begrudgingly.
He went to the door in long strides, pausing only long enough to let Dirk step hurriedly aside, then proceeded out and up the roof stairs. The door closed behind him. Dirk started toward the others, but the scene was quickly breaking up. Janicek, with a frown and a shake of his head, turned and left quickly for another room. Gwen rose pale and shaken, and Vickery took a step toward Dirk.
That was not a good thing for you to witness, the Cavalier said. But perhaps it will be enlightening to you. Still, I regret your presence. I would not have you think of High Cavalan as the Kimdisi do.
I didn't understand, Dirk said.
Vickery put an arm around his shoulder and drew him off toward the dining room, Gwen just behind them.
What was he talking about?
Ah, much. I will explain. But I must tell you a second regret also, that your promised breakfast is not set and ready for you, he smiled.
I can wait.
They went into the dining room and sat, Gwen still silent and troubled.
What did Gas call me?
Dirk asked.
Cora something? What does that mean?
Vickery appeared hesitant. The word is Corarial. It is an old Cavalar word. Its meanings have changed over the centuries. Today, here in this place, when used by Gas and myself, it means protected. Protected by us. Protected of Ironjade.
That is what you would like it to mean, Jan, Gwen said, her voice barbed and angry. Tell him the real meaning.
Dirk waited. Vickery crossed his arms and his eyes went from one of them to the other.
Very well, Gwen, if you wish it.
He turned to Dirk.
The full, older meaning is protected property. I can only hope you do not take insult to this. None is intended. Corarial is a word for people not part of a holdfast, yet still guarded and valued.
Dirk remembered the things Ruach had told him the night before, the words dimly perceived through a haze of green wine. He felt anger creeping like a red tide up his neck and fought to hold it down.
I'm not accustomed to being property, he said bitingly, no matter how highly valued. And who are you supposed to be protecting me against?
Lorimar and his Tain Sarnal, Vickery said. He leaned forward across the table and took Dirk's arm in a powerful grip.
Gas used the word perhaps too hastily, Telerian, yet to him it no doubt seemed right at the moment, an old word for an old concept. Wrong, yes, I can recognize the wrongness, wrong in that you were a human, a person, no one's property. Yet it was an apt word to use to one like Lorimar Highbraith, who understands such things and little else. If it disturbs you so greatly, as I know the concept disturbs Gwen, then I am grievously sorry my Tain used it.
Well, Dirk said, trying to be reasonable, I thank you for the apology, but that's not good enough.
I still don't know what's going on. Who was Lorimar? What did he want? Why do I have to be protected against him?
Vickery sighed and released Dirk's arm. It will not be a simple matter to answer your questions. I must tell you of the history of my people, a little that I know and much that I have guessed. He turned to Gwen. We can eat while we talk, if no one objects. Will you bring food? She nodded and left, returning several minutes later carrying a large tray piled high with black bread and three kinds of cheese, and hard-cooked eggs in bright blue shells. And beer, of course. Vickery leaned forward so that his elbows rested on the tabletop. He talked while the others ate.
High Cavalan has been a violent world, he said. It is the oldest outworld except for the Forgotten Colony, and all its long histories are histories of struggle. Sadly, those histories are also largely fabrication and legend, full of ethnocentric lies. Yet these tales were believed right up until the time that the starships came again, following the interregnum. In the holdfasts of the Ironjade Gathering, for example, boys were taught that the universe has only 30 stars, and High Cavalan is its center. Mankind originated there when K. Arn Smith and his Tain Roland Wolf Jade were born of a mating between a volcano and a thunderstorm,
They walked, steaming, from the lips of the volcano into a world full of demons and monsters, and for many years they wandered far and near, having various adventures. At last they came across a deep cave beneath a mountain, and inside they found a dozen women, the first women in the world. The women were afraid of the demons and would not come out. So Kay and Roland stayed, seizing the women roughly and making them Ein Kethi. The cave became their holdfast. The women birthed them many sons, and thus began Kavalar's civilization. The path upward was no easy one, the stories say. The boys born of the Ein Kethi were all the seed of Kay and Roland, hot-tempered and dangerous and strong-willed. There were many quarrels. One son, the wily and evil John Coalblack, habitually killed his Kethi, his holdfast brothers, in fits of envy because he could not hunt as well as they. Then, hoping to gain some of their skill and strength, he fell to eating their bodies. Roland found him engaged in such a feast one day, and chased the child across the hills, beating him with a great flail. Afterwards, John did not return to Ironjade, but started his own holdfast in a coal mine and took to Tain, a demon. That was the origin of the cannibal highborns of the deep coal dwellings. Other holdfasts were founded in like manner, although the Ironjade histories give the other rebels a good deal more credit than Black John. Roland and Kay were stern masters, not easy to live with. Shan the swordsman, for example, was a good, strong boy who left with his Tain and Bethane after a violent fight with Kay, who would not respect his jade and silver. Shan was the founder of the Shanagate Holding. Ironjade recognizes his line as fully human, and always did. So it was with most of the great holdfasts. Those that died out, like the deep coal dwellings, fared less well in the legends. Those legends are quite extensive, and many are enlightening. There is the tale of the disobedient Kethi, as an instance. The first Ironjade knew that the only fit home for a man was deep under rock, a fastness in stone, a cave, or a mine. Yet those who came later did not believe. The plains looked open and inviting to their naive eyes. So they went out with Ein Kethi and children and erected tall cities. That was their folly. Fires fell from the sky to destroy them, melting and twisting the towers they had thrown up, burning the city men, sending the survivors fleeing underground in terror to where the flames could not reach. And when their Ein Kethi gave them births, the children were demons, not men at all. Sometimes they ate their way free of the womb. Vickery paused and took a drink from his mug. Dirk, almost finished with his breakfast, pushed a few crumbs of cheese aimlessly across his plate and frowned. "This is all fascinating," he said, "but I don't see the relevance, I'm afraid." Vickery drank again and took a quick bite of cheese. "Be patient," he said. "Dirk," Gwen said dryly, "the histories of the four surviving holdfast coalitions differ in many respects, but there are two great events on which they agree. Those are the milestones of Kavalar myth. All of them have a version of that last story, the burning of the cities. It is called the Time of Fire and Demons. A later story, the Sorrowing Plague, is also repeated virtually word for word in every holdfast." "Truth," Vickery said. "These stories, these were the only accounts of ancient days that I was given to work with. By the time of my birth, no sane Kavalar believed any of this." Gwen coughed politely. Vickery glanced at her and smiled. "Yes, Gwen corrects me," he said. "Few sane Kavalars believed any of this," he went on. "Yet the doubters had nothing else to believe, no alternate truth to adhere to. Most of them did not particularly care. When star travel resumed and the Wolfmen and Toberians and later the Kimdisi came to High Kavalan, they found us eager to learn the lost arts of technology, and that is what they taught us in return for our gems and heavy metals. Soon we had starships, but still no history." He smiled. "I found what truth we now have during my studies on Avalon. It was little enough, yet sufficient. Hidden in the great databanks of the Academy, I found records of the original colonization of High Cavalan. It was fairly late in the Double War. A group of settlers left from Tara for a world beyond the Tempter's Veil, where they hoped to find safety from the Harangans and the Harangan slave races. The computers indicate that for a time they did. They discovered a planet harsh and strange, yet rich. Quickly they built a high-level colony, based on mining operations. There are records of trade between Tara and the colony for about 20 years. Then the planet beyond the Veil abruptly vanished from human history. Tara hardly noticed. Those were the cruelest years of the war. "And you think the planet was High Cavalan?" Dirk asked. "It is known for a fact," Vickery replied. "The coordinates match, and other fascinating pieces of data as well. The colony was named Cavanaugh, for example. Perhaps even more intriguing, the leader of the first expedition was a starship captain named Kay Smith. A woman." Gwen smiled at that. "There was something else I discovered as well," Vickery continued, "quite by chance. You must remember that most of the Outworlds were never involved in the Double War. The fringe civilizations are children of the collapse or even post-collapse. No Cavalar had ever seen a Harangan, much less any of the various slave races. I had not until I went to Avalon and grew interested in the broader aspects of human history. Then, in one account of the conflict in the Jambles, I lucked upon illustrations of the various semi-sentient slaves the Harangans used as shock troops on worlds they did not deem worthy of their own immediate attention. Undoubtedly, being a man of the Jambles, you know these alien races, Dirk. The nocturnal Hrun, heavy gravity warriors of immense strength and savagery who see well into the infrared. Winged dactyloids, who got their name from some chance resemblance to a beast of human prehistory. Worst of all, the Gith Yankee, the Soulsucks, and their terrible psionic powers." Dirk was nodding. "I've seen a Harun or two during my travels. The other races are pretty much extinct, aren't they?" "Perhaps," Vickery said. "I looked at the illustrations I had found for a long time, and returned to them again and again. There was a quality about them that disturbed me. Finally, I puzzled out the truth. The Harun, the Dactyloids, the Gith Yankee each bore a vague semblance to the gargoyles that sit at the door of every Kevlar holdfast. They were the demons of our myth cycles, Dirk." Vickery stood up and began to pace slowly up and down the length of the room. Still talking, his voice even and controlled, his excitement showing only in the act of pacing. "When Gwen and I returned to Ironjade, I put forward my theory, based on the old legends, the demon song cycle of the great poet-adventurer Jamis Lion Tal, and on the Academy databanks. Consider its truth. The colony, Cavanaugh, stands, with its cities on the plains and its far-flung mining operations. The Harangans level the cities with a nuclear bombardment. Survivors live only in the deep shelters and out in the wild, in the mines. To make the planet their own, the Harangans also land contingents of their slave races. Then they depart, not to return for a century. The mines become the first holdfasts. Others are built later, carved deep into stone. Their cities gone, the miners revert to a more primitive level of technology and soon establish a rigid survival-oriented culture. For endless generations they war against the slave races and against each other. At the same time, beneath the radioactive ruins of the cities, human mutations begin to arise." Now Dirk stood up. "Jan," he said. Vickery stopped his pacing, turned, frowned. "I have been very damn patient," Dirk said. "I understand that all this is of great concern to you. It's your work, but I want some answers, and I want them now." He raised his hand and ticked off the questions on his fingers. "Who is Lorimar? What did he want? Why do I have to be protected against him?" Gwen rose too. "Dirk," she said, "Jan is only giving you the background you need to understand. Don't be so..." "No," Vickery quieted her with a wave of his hand. No, Talarian is correct. I grow too enthusiastic whenever I speak of these matters. To Dirk he said, I will answer you directly then. Lorimar is a very traditional Cavalar, so traditional that he is out of place even on High Cavalan itself. He is a creature of another age. Do you recall yesterday morning when I gave you my pin to wear, and Garrus and I both expressed concern about your safety after dark? Dirk nodded. His hand went up and touched the small pin, snugly fastened to his collar. Yes. Lorimar Highbraith and others like him were the cause of our concern, Talarian. The reasons are not easy to tell. Let me, Gwen said. Dirk, listen. The Highborn Cavalars, the Holdfast folk, always respected each other throughout the centuries. Oh, they fought and warred so much that some 20-odd Holdfast and coalitions were destroyed utterly, leaving only the 4 great surviving Holdfasts of modern times. Still, they recognized each other as human, subject to the rules of High War and the Cavalar Code Duello. But there were others, you see. Solitary people in the mountains, people who dwelled under their ruined cities, farmers. Those are just guesses, mine and Jan's, but the point is, such people did exist. Survivors outside the mining camps that became the Holdfasts. Those survivors the Highborns would not recognize as men and women. Jan left something out of all that history, you see. Oh, don't fidget so. I know it was a long story, but it was important. You remember all about the Harangan slave races corresponding to the 3 demons of Cavalar myth? Well, the only problem with that is there are 3 slave races, but 4 kinds of demons. The worst and most evil demons of all were the Mockmen. Dirk frowned. Mockmen. Lorimar called me a Mockman. I thought it was something like not man, more or less. No, Gwen said. Not man is a common term. Mockman is unique to High Cavalan. Shape changers, the legends say. Wares and liars. They wear any form, but most often that of men, and they want to infiltrate the Holdfasts. Inside, disguised as humans, they can secretly strike and kill. Those other survivors, the farmers and the mountain families and the mutants and the unlucky, the other humans on Cavanaugh, those were the Mockmen, the werefolk. They were not allowed to surrender. The rules of High War did not apply. The Cavalars exterminated them, never trusting any to be human. They were alien animals. After centuries, those that remained were hunted for sport. The Holdfast men always hunted in pairs, tane and tane, so each could swear to the humanity of the other when they returned. Dirk looked aghast. Does this still go on? Gwen shrugged. Seldom. Modern Cavalars admit the sins of their history. Even before the starships came, the Iron Jade Gathering and Red Steel, the most progressive coalitions, had banned the taking of Mockmen. The hunters had a custom. When they did not wish to kill a Mockman immediately, for whatever reason, but wanted him as their personal prey later, they would brand him Corarial, and no one else would touch him under penalty of duel. The Iron Jade and Red Steel Kethi went out and ran down all the Mockmen they could, set them up in villages and tried to bring them back to civilization from the savagery they had fallen into. All they caught, they named Corarial. There was a brief high war over it. Iron Jade against Shanagate. Iron Jade won, and Corarial took on a new meaning, protected property. And Lorimar? Dirk demanded. How does he fit in? She smiled wickedly for a second, reminding him of Janicek. In any culture, a few diehards remain, true believers and fundamentalists. Braith is the most conservative coalition, and about a tenth of them, Jan's estimate, still believe in Mockmen. Mostly hunters who want to believe are nearly all of them from Braith. Lorimar and his Tain and a handful of his Kethi are here to hunt. The game is more varied than on High Cavalan, and no one enforces any game laws. In fact, there are no laws. The festival pacts ended long ago. Lorimar can kill anything he wants to. Including humans, Dirk said. If they can find them, she said. Lartain has 20 citizens, I believe. 21 with you. Us, and a poet named Kirak Redsteel Kavis, who lives in an old watchtower, and a pair of legitimate hunters from Shanagate. The rest are Braiths, hunting Mockmen and other game when they can't find Mockmen.
A generation older than Jan, chiefly, and quite bloodthirsty. Except for stories they heard in their holdfasts and maybe a few illicit man-kills in the Lamoran Hills, they know nothing of the old hunts except the legends. All of them are bursting with tradition and frustration, she smiled. And this goes on. No one does anything. Jan Vickery crossed his arms. I have a confession to make, Talarian, he said gravely. We lied to you yesterday, Garth and I, when you asked us why we are here. In truth, I was the one who lied. Garth told at least the partial truth. We must protect Gwen. She is an off-worlder, no Cavalar, and the Braiths would gladly kill her for a Mockman without the shield of Iron Jade. The same is truth for Arkin Ruark, who knows nothing of this, not even that he has our protection. Yet he does. He too is Carariel of Iron Jade. Our reasons for being here go beyond that, however. It was vital that I leave High Cavalan at the time I did. When I took on my high names and published my theories, I became at once very powerful and celebrated in the High Bond Council, and very hated. Many religious men took personal insult from my contention that Kay Ironsmith was a woman. I was challenged 6 times on that account alone. In the last duel, Garth killed a man while I wounded his tane so badly that he will never walk again. I was not willing to let this go on. Warlorn was empty of enemies, it seemed. At my urging, the Iron Jade Council dispatched Gwen on her ecological project. Yet at the same time, I became aware of Lorimar's activity here. He had already taken his first trophy, and word had come back to Braith and spread to us. Garth and I discussed the matter and determined to stop it. The situation is explosive in the extreme. If the Kimdisi should learn that the Cavalars are hunting Mockman again, they would gladly spread the news to all the outworlds. There is little love lost between Kimdis and High Cavalan, as you may know. We do not fear the Kimdisi themselves, who espouse a religion and a philosophy as non-violent as the Amarelli. Other fringe worlds are more dangerous. The Wolfmen are always volatile and erratic. The Torberians might end their trade agreements if they learn that Cavalars are hunting their laggardly tourists. Perhaps even Avalon would turn against us, should the news go beyond the veil, and we would be barred from the Academy. These risks cannot be taken. Lorimar and his fellows do not care, and the Holdfast Councils can do nothing. They have no authority here, and only the Iron Jades have even the slightest concern about events light years away on a dying world. Thus, Garth and I act against the Braith Hunters alone. Up to now it has not come to open conflict. We travel as widely as we can, visiting each of the cities, searching for those who remain on Warlorn. Any we find, we make Carariel. We have found only a few, a wild child lost during the festival, a few lingering wolfmen in Hapless City, an Ironhorn hunter from Tara. To each I give a token of my esteem, he smiled, a little black iron pin shaped like a banshee. It is a proximity beacon to warn a hunter who gets too close. Should they touch any wearing such a pin, any of my Carariel, it would be a dueling offense. Lorimar may rant and rage, but he will not duel us. It would be his death. I see, said Dirk. He reached up to his collar, unfastened the little iron pin, and tossed it on the table amid the remains of breakfast. Well, that's lovely, but you can have your little pin. I am nobody's property. I've been taking care of myself for a long time, and I can keep on taking care of myself. Vickery frowned. Gwen, he said, can you not convince him that it would be safer if... No, she said sharply. I appreciate what you're trying to do, Jan. You know that. But I understand Dirk's feelings. I don't like being protected either, and I refuse to be property. Her voice was curt, decisive. Vickery regarded them helplessly. Very well, he said. He picked up Dirk's discarded pin. I should tell you something, Talarian. We have had better luck in finding people than the Braiths have simply because we search the cities while they hunt the forests, hopeless slaves to old habits. They seldom find anyone in the wild. Up to now, they have had no inkling as to what Garth and I were doing. But this morning, Lorimar Highbraith came to me in grievance because the previous day he had come across likely game while hunting with his Tain, and been prevented from taking that game. The prey he sought was a man on a skyscoot, flying alone above the mountains. He held up the banshee-shaped pin. "Without this," he said, "he would have forced you down, or lasered you from the sky, run you through the wilderness, and finally killed you." He put the pin into his pocket, stared at Dirk meaningfully for a minute, and left them.